You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for bloggers and creatives hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist living in London. Each week, I interview different women in blogging and the online world, getting their best blogging tips and advice and a little bit of gossip too. Thanks for listening. Welcome to another episode of What She Said. It's been a little while since I've sat in front of my microphone and recorded a pre-roll or recorded anything. And this one feels kind of special because in today's episode, the wonderful Sam Sparrow of Travel Blog As the Sparrow Flies interviewed me. So when we recorded her episode, which was episode 10, we sat down and had a whole day of recording podcasts and eating custard tarts and just generally having a nice time. And it was such a fun episode to record because it was just a chat between the two of us, but also it's pretty scary. I put myself out there every week interviewing other people, but I don't put myself out there speaking. I don't do those episodes where it's just me talking. That would really scare me. Massive props to everybody else out there, any podcaster out there that does that, because it's scary. Anyway, we talked about me and my blogging journey and just had a bit of a giggle. You won't hear an eye, she wasn't there. Her father was looking after her that day and keeping her out of trouble. But you will hear lots of ums and ahs and me being very awkward indeed. And the amazing Sam Sparrow, who is a consummate professional and an epic podcaster, keeping it all together for us. Before we get into that episode, I just wanted to say a humongous thank you to all of you. I finished recording my last podcast episode a few weeks back, and I'm yet to edit them all. But that will be soon, and then I'm going to take a break because I am a little bit tired and quite ready for a break, and I really want to keep this podcast going and be fresh and excited and back with loads more amazing guests in the year. But until that happens, a huge thank you to you all, because everyone's been so amazing, so supportive and wonderful, and I have a little favour to ask. Please, if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe. And more importantly, I would absolutely adore it if you could rate the podcast and review it. Every time people review the podcast, it helps get us seen a little bit more for other people. So it just helps get the podcast out there for other creatives to listen to. And I would really love that to happen. So yes, please rate and review, except if you're going to rate and review badly, in which case just tweet me and tell me you hate it, and that's cool. Thank you so much. I love you all. Keep using the hashtag What She Said podcast, and tweet at me and DM me and all the things that you do already. You're amazing. So okay, mush over. Let's get into the podcast.
So I have the very privileged position of being the person that Lucy, the usual host of the What She Said podcast, asked me to interview her for her podcast.
Yeah.
And so here I am on your podcast, Lucy.
In my house.
I'm in your house. That's it now. I've brought a suitcase. I've never leave. Moved in. I'm your new nanny to Anais now.
You're already my podcast producer.
Well, so I try.
It's the logical next step.
That's a lot of pressure now, because this podcast has to be really, really good. So we'll see. But Lucy asked me to come along and interview her for the podcast because she's a massive big head. But also, because Lucy's got lots and lots to offer in the online space, the blogging space, and obviously lots of opinions to say. And although Lucy says them all the time when she's interviewing her guests, we thought that that wasn't quite enough, and so wanted to give an opportunity to put Lucy in the spotlight.
Thanks.
welcome to your podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be here.
Amazing.
It's amazing to be invited on. I just can't believe
well,
it.
There was a list and you were kind of
at the bottom.
In the bottom and then we had to do it. So for those people that are either new to the podcast or new to Lucy.
Welcome.
So, yeah, well, welcome to the podcast. Where have you been? Listen to this one and then go back and listen to the back catalogue.
Yeah, definitely.
But also, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, things that they might not already know about you?
Yes, I would love to. So my name's Lucy. From the intro, you'll hear me prattling on about, I think I say I'm Lucy, a freelance journalist living in London. That is essentially me. So I am a blogger and I started out in travel blogging and then life kind of changed massively when I got married and had babies. One baby.
I was going to say, oh my God, is there something I don't know?
Yeah. I want there to be more immediately. So I'm just trying to live the dream in my head. So when I had a baby, I started writing about my pregnancy and now I'm writing about motherhood and stuff like that. But I'm kind of, I guess, a lifestyle blogger of sorts. But along the way in travel blogging, I need to start that again. I haven't done this very well.
Sorry.
So I started a travel blog when I went traveling.
And when was that?
So
how old were you?
I was old. So the first time I went traveling.
You were old. I was old.
But for a gap year. So the first time I went traveling, I was like, I went travelling solo when I was about 25, not old at all. And then,
but also quite different to kind of the usual either 18 or 21 post school, post uni kind of gap year backpacking.
Yeah, exactly. I already was a flash packer, I guess. And then I didn't stop blogging until I went travelling for the second time. And by that point, I'd met my boyfriend, now husband. We both quit our jobs. We met at work. We were working for Disney. That's something you probably don't know about me.
No.
I used to work for Disney.
I sort of did, because I know that Sophie works for Disney, and I think I picked up on a conversation somewhere. And obviously Disney are quite local as a head office to where we are now.
Yeah, down the road.
And where you're living. Mm-hmm. So, but I didn't realise you'd met Ollie there.
I did, yeah. So we both
The pair of you are far too cynical to both work for Disney.
I know, right? It's crazy. Surprisingly, the Disney head office is, although it's super magical and sometimes Mickey comes in dressed up and all the rest of it.
Oh my God,
honestly,
stop.
It's brilliant. It's just the best place to work. But everyone is also massively down to earth and loves a drink. So, and also loves to sleep with each other. So there's a lot
wow.
of, yeah, it's great. It's just a brilliant place to work. So we both met there and then Ollie got made redundant. I'd already left Disney by this point, and I was working for House of Fraser in the head office in premium beauty. So that's why I'm so obsessed with beauty, and I have way too many products.
Other things I didn't know about you.
Yeah.
So when I asked you for skincare advice, you were the right person to come to.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely amazing.
he got made redundant, so we were like, oh, you know what, sod it. Let's go travelling. So I left my job, and off we went. And I'd always loved writing. I tried blogging a little bit, but I'd always been so painfully shy that I always did things under a pseudonym. And I remember starting a blog on Blogger in, I don't know, 2008 maybe. And
that's when I had my Blogger blog.
Oh,
it was sort of 2007, 2008, and it was about knitting.
Oh, yeah, but you had some really cool names. I didn't understand any of it. I remember not understanding that the name of my blog and the URL were related. Like, as in, I was so confused when I was setting it up and filling out the forms and stuff like that. Everything, nothing made sense, and I found it again. I deleted it all, actually. It was terrible. I mean, it was good from the point of view of the writing. The writing wasn't terrible, but it was just like a space to kind of rant. I think about Hindus at the time.
Oh my God, that's
it was basically like a diary. That's what it was.
Is that still available anywhere, or is it really deleted?
It's really deleted.
That's so sad, because that is something that I'd want to read right now.
Oh,
like
maybe
like the burn book from Mean Girls. It would be absolutely
exactly.
amazing.
Yeah, In fact, that would make a good podcast.
It would make a great podcast.
There was only two blogs, though, so...
Well, it wouldn't take long to read.
That's true.
You know. So do you think then it was travel that gave you that, you felt like you had something that you could blog about to get you over that kind of initial shyness on the internet? And or what was it that then made you go, no, okay, I'm going to do this?
I think it was a combination of the fact that I had something interesting to write about that I felt wasn't so personal that I... Because back in those days, Ollie and I blogged together, and we had a blog that was basically just the two of us. It wasn't for any other reason apart from to, you know, the same way most people do, let our family know that we're still alive, that kind of thing, document our days. And, so I think it was a combination of us both being part of it that gave me the confidence, and also that it that it wasn't personal.
And was that under what is now Wanderlust?
No.
Is that still on the internet?
No, because it's all been migrated.
It's all been migrated. So what was it called?
So it was called 195 Days of Summer.
Oh my God, I love that. Because you were away for 195 days?
We were supposed to be away for 195 days.
There's a story here.
But we, so we were supposed to be away for 195 days, which is almost 6 months. But we actually stayed away for about 3 years. We did come back. It doesn't quite have the same ring to it. We just decided that long-term travel was for us, and because I loved blogging, I fell in love with blogging, I fell in love with the online world, I made contacts, and I don't even know how it all happened, and I started freelancing while I was away, mostly doing things like social media management, which FYI I'm terrible at. Don't anyone ever hire me as a social media manager. So that sort of stuff. So then, and also, after about 2 days, maybe, of having this blog, me and Ollie, I realised that I was a lot more into it than he was.
Yeah, okay.
A lot more into it. So I was basically doing everything. And I also, which I didn't mind, but I started to really resent the fact that there was another voice there.
So did you kick him off?
I staged a hostile takeover and got rid of him, yeah.
And, like, migrated it, new domain.
Yeah.
Did he know any of this was happening until it...
Changed the password, no.
I mean, that's how all good marriages work, I've heard.
Yeah, so that's what happened.
And is that how... So that, you know, that's, you know, how quite a lot of people I know that have started blogging and then have become kind of more into it have had not quite the same story as you, but have had similar kind of, there's been a reason, there's been a hook, a thing, and then it's just migrated them into the online world. And I guess I've got kind of two questions. And the first is, like, you mentioned being shy, and you've written before about being introverted and things like that. Do you feel, because I feel like this, that the online world gives you that kind of passport, behind a computer to the world to communicate in a way that perhaps you don't feel quite as comfortable to do face-to-face?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what I think draws you into that online world and making those connections and making those friends?
Yeah, 100%. You've hit the nail on the head, really. I'm naturally introverted, but I'm one of those people that school friends or whatever would say, oh, she's not introverted.
Same.
She's Yeah, exactly. Mm. She's loud and she's chatty and all the rest of it. But I find, that I think when we met, like, you immediately go into the deeper meaningful. I would know about your marriage and stuff like that before I know about what type of ice cream you like or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think online relationships, so, like, we stalked each other through Instagram for a while. And I think, you know, for me, like, a lot of people say that about me as well. And I think you can be a confident introvert.
Yeah,
so
totally.
I hate small talk. Mm-hmm. I hate large groups of people. I'm comfortable with people that I know, and the internet allows me to really get to know someone and feel comfortable with them before meeting them face to face.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's been really good. And then I guess that's part of the reason, I guess, why you blogged more and did more and got really into it. And I think the online world has allowed so many people to build careers feeling comfortable that way. But when did it get serious for you? At what point did you go, yeah, okay, this is something that I want to pursue and see where it takes me?
Pretty quickly. So it was definitely before I came home. Oh, before we came back for a wedding where I was a bridesmaid. So we had that 195 days where we knew we actually were coming back, but quite soon into our travels we were like, we're going to book an open-ended ticket back, like back out again. So really quite soon, I would say a couple of months, I think, when people started commenting on the blog and I started interacting with people on social media, and it was more about the writing though than anything. I just thought, I don't need to work for the next 6 months. I can just write, and that's amazing. And then I started seeing that other people were doing that for a living. Beverly and I talked about this the other day because I interviewed her for the podcast, and the first travel blogger that she kind of connected with or read basically was the same one that I did, and that was Adventurous Kate.
Yeah.
And when
it's the same one that I think we all have read first. Yeah.
She's like the number one
female
travel blogger. So when I saw that she was doing it, and she was pretty, like, she would talk about how she makes money travel blogging, how this is her profession and stuff like that, I was like, shit, I can do this as a full-time job.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality that those guys portray is a lot different from the actual reality of what it's like to do it, and now being on the other side and having made a living from travel blogging, I know that I would call bullshit on a lot of, on some of what they say. But
yeah, and I also think there are those that have been around since forever.
That's it.
And the world is different now, and they've been able to mold and make their fortune before a lot has changed. And I definitely want to ask you a little bit more about kind of how you've seen the changes. But before we get into that, like, how did you? So you were running this, you were traveling, you were out there for 3 years, loving life, being a social media manager for various different brands and people, and running your blog. And then obviously the moment comes where you have to come home, or you decided to come home, whatever that was. How did blogging and the blog and where you took that in terms of your career change for you at that point?
So by the time we decided to come home, so Ollie had asked me to marry him.
No.
Yeah. What a love.
He is a love. I met him for the first time this morning. He is total love. He bought us custard tarts.
He's the dream.
He's a total dream. Behind every good blogger dreamy person.
Yeah, a dreamy husband paying the mortgage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And providing the custard tarts. So he had proposed to me, and at that point we knew that we wanted to stay away for as long as possible, but we were actually living and working in Thailand on a tiny little island called Koh Tao, which was awesome, but we were, after about 6 months, we were really ready to come home. So we already knew we had a wedding to come home to. So we were like, you know what? Actually, let's just go home. Ollie will do a proper job and I will carry on freelancing. Because by that point, I'd already started writing for various different publications. I had already got my first byline for Lonely Planet and Lonely Planet Traveller, I should say. So already at that point, I kind of had transitioned out of being a full-time travel blogger to being able to do social media management and kind of writing and doing a bit of copywriting. I don't know, it's that bullshit, the hustle, you know? Yeah. That's what I was doing. So I knew that I would be able to do that when I came back. But then my career changed in that the money that you earn when you're living on a tiny island in
Koh Tao. Yeah, it goes a lot further, right?
Exactly.
So London is perhaps slightly more expensive.
Yeah. Just a tiny bit. That was pretty tough, actually. We were quite broke when we first came back for the wedding. But then Ollie got a job, and I started writing for bigger publications. And then fairly soon... Oh, I started working for... that's when I started working for Traverse, actually. Pretty much when I came back. Which was awesome. I had a really... It was just the best, actually. I had the best time working with Paul and Michael. Had loads and loads of fun, met loads of people, learnt a lot. And then started taking my writing more seriously and got a staff writer role at The Express. So that's when my career completely changed, really.
Yeah, and so you are now, so we're all apparently slashies now. That's the word that I've heard, and it really hurts my soul.
I don't like the name.
No, it's really bad.
But makes me think of gash. I don't feel good about that.
Oh, wow.
It's your podcast, babe, yeah. So you just pop that one out there. But yeah, so slashies are like your something slash something slash something. So obviously you started out in travel blogging and then you kind of, as you say, did the hustle and were kind of doing lots of different internet online type jobs. And then you started getting bylines, writing and doing more freelance journalism. Would you now describe yourself as a blogger slash journalist, or would you describe yourself now as a journalist and that's what you do?
I think I would describe myself as a journalist
With a blog on the side.
With a blog on the side, yeah. It's not to say that that wouldn't change in the future. I suppose I could keep it really simple and just say I'm a writer.
Yeah.
Actually, when people ask me what I do, I'll often just say I'm a writer. And normally then they'll ask, who do you write for? Like, lots of people.
Yeah, and lots of people make the assumption when you say that you're a writer that you write for another publication that's not your own.
That's true, yeah.
Actually, you kind of let them go with their assumption. Wouldn't it be funny, like, in 20 years' time, if you said you're a writer, people just assumed you had your own website?
Yeah.
What a weird place would that be?
I know, because that kind of is
the kids have got all that to look forward to.
I know.
In the future, lucky right? You.
Oh, those, we've done all the hard kids. Work yeah. and the awkwardness of explaining what our job is.
and now you get to play in the space. So obviously, you know, you've done blogging and now you've made that transition to being a freelance journalist. You were on staff at The Express, but now you write freelance for a range of different publications.
Yeah, lots of different people. Anyone, I always say anyone who will pay me, because I have actually. So the way it kind of works is that I obviously pitch the stories to editors.
Yeah.
And it will be a story that I want to write. And typically it has, over the past year, I guess, has been focused around either travel or pregnancy, motherhood and health. So when I was on staff at The Express, I was writing travel and lifestyle. But now I don't actually write as much travel for other people. I just don't, because I'm not travelling as much.
Yeah.
And I write a lot about pregnancy and motherhood. And
because that's
lifestyle, I guess.
And that's what's in your life right now. And I think, you know, a lot of people will write. And I think this is why sometimes lots of people describe that you should have a niche. And I know that you're relatively vocal about the whole niche scenario. So we can talk about that. But I think, you know, that can be really hard. And I think particularly of women of our age, that can be quite hard. Because I think, you know, when you get into your late 20s, early 30s, your life can change quite a lot over a period of years. It's not just one big change.
Yeah.
But your life changes, your lifestyle changes, and therefore writing about the same thing throughout is really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Because actually the best writers write from their experience. So if your experience is, oh my God, I have a human being growing inside of me, naturally that's what you're going to write about. And how did you find that transition, I guess? As a journalist, that's relatively straightforward because you just pitch those articles. But I know that you have written travel content on Wanderloose, but you've also written quite a lot of pregnancy and motherhood content. And how did that transition, how did you find that transition?
I found it quite natural because already I'd started writing. So I kind of gone through, I guess, when we came back for, no, actually, you know what, it was when we were living in Kotel. I already was like, you know what, I'm not traveling anymore, I'm just
living here,
living in basically the Costa del Sol of Thailand. There was nothing authentically Thai about it apart from that it was in Thailand. No, it's true though, like I loved Kotel, I absolutely loved Kotel, but the people that live there, there's a lot of English people.
They need to do a Benidorm version of Kotel.
Oh,
the TV
my
program.
God, it would be so good. There was a bakery.
You should write that script.
Oh, if only. Yeah, there was so much funny stuff that happened on Kotel. It's like a great place to live, but because I already wasn't travelling and I started to be interested in other things, I started writing a bit more about, I suppose, kind of personal essays about things like depression, anxiety and things that I was going through. And I was having quite a tough time, as I recall, when I lived there, from a mental health point of view. So actually, when I started writing about pregnancy and motherhood, it didn't feel so unnatural because I think I'd already lost the audience that I had previously. I think my stats were just horrendous. Just before we moved to Koh Tao, they just dive-bombed because I'd basically stopped writing about travel in Southeast Asia, backpacking in Southeast Asia, and started writing about other stuff. And then, yeah, I gained a whole new audience. So, yeah, that's a long-winded way of
saying, yeah, it was fine, actually.
It was fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine, thanks. But that's so interesting in terms of growing your audience, because, I mean, a lot of people will be listening to this podcast both to find out more about kind of the bloggers that they love reading and people's lives online.
Yeah.
But also to kind of talk about those tips and those sort of tricks and understanding. Yeah. And I guess, how do you... So one of the things that I... So I write about travel and I'm a fairly new travel blogger. But I'm also... I'm interested in about 20 million things. And I've started writing about stuff that isn't travel. And the thing that keeps going around in my mind is, oh God, but, you know, like, what's going to happen? Is anyone going to read this? Or is anyone not going to read that? Or are all those people that are reading the travel content just going to go, no, sorry. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about your audience and that kind of broad lifestyle? Like, there's a lot of bloggers that blog in the kind of very broad lifestyle kind of niche, and kind of what are your thoughts around that and kind of bringing that audience on board with you?
I think niche is such a divisive term because I think people just misunderstand what a niche is. For me, Monica explained it really, really well, so plug to episode 3 of what she said. She talks about it there. But I really think that you are your niche. Nobody else can write about you and your experiences. They just can't. So in my head, I always think, I'm my niche. I don't have to worry about being constrained. Obviously, if all you're interested in for 3 years and the community that you built up is something crazy specific like Portuguese custard tarts, and then suddenly one day you're like, I actually hate them, I'm lactose intolerant.
That would be sad for so many reasons.
It'd be so upsetting. But that might be an issue that you need to address. But most people have lots of interests and outside of the one topic that they're writing about. So even when you're only writing about travel, you write about it from your perspective. You write about it in your voice, so your audience are gonna probably come along with you whatever you write about. And the ones that drop off, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to be comfortable.
Because they're not there for you
exactly
anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, and I think people get really caught up in the numbers, actually. Yes, and I know it's really hard. It's very easy to sit there and go, oh, yeah, you shouldn't look at the numbers. Because actually, you kind of need to. If you want to make a living out of this kind of stuff, the numbers are important for a lot of different reasons. But it's about having that balance and feeling, I guess, authentically true to yourself.
Yeah, and you're right, it's really easy to get caught up in the numbers. And the thing that I always say to people when new bloggers, really, when they'll say, oh, what numbers, what metrics should I be looking at, etc., etc., and I kind of think, don't look at anything until you're kind of in the swing of things,
until you've found your voice.
Totally. And then as soon as you have, and as soon as you know why you're looking at the numbers, it's not about what metrics should you be looking at. It's more about what do you want to gain from the metrics. So if you already know, I want to make a living out of this, I want to make a full-time living, and I want to do it via XYZ, affiliate marketing, or a lot of people would just know that they want a press trip, or whatever, I want to earn 6 figures by the end of the year, then, okay, you have a goal, you can pick the numbers that you look at based on that. I really just think, just don't look at them for as long as you can bear not to, I think.
Yeah, I agree, actually, and I think that they can send you to quite dark places sometimes.
Definitely.
And actually, it takes the joy out of why you're doing it in the first place. And a lot of people want to have online careers because it gives them the flexibility of doing all of the other things they love as well and bringing joy into their life. You know, there's lots of jobs that you can do that perhaps don't bring you joy.
Yeah.
That, you know, and there's a reason you're doing this. And so you have to maintain that balance between
Totally.
Wanting to write and do the joy. So So, you know, you've got things relatively sorted now, and you're a new mum to the most beautiful little girl in the entire world. She is spellbinding. If Lucy gets out any blog posts, it's a miracle, because I could just sit here and look at her all day. But, you know, you're at the moment kind of finding your balance as a new mum and kind of thinking that through. But what, I guess, it would be really good to kind of understand, because you've come through this mix of traditional job, blogging, and now being a writer, whether that's a journalist or otherwise, what is it that, you know, you really love about what that brings you? And is there anything that you really hate about it? Because I think a lot of people listening, for them, what you're doing now is their dream.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a lot of honesty about that. Sometimes it can be a bit naff.
Yeah, the shit parts, I love the flexibility. I love the fact that I have essentially a lifestyle business, in that I work to create the lifestyle that I want. I didn't do this to make a lot of money. As a writer, you really don't make a lot of money. even when you get good bylines for national newspapers, you know, it's still tough to make ends meet sometimes. But yeah, so that's the side that I love about it, for sure. The flexibility, the creativity, all of that good stuff. What I hate about it is I hate social media.
Okay.
I hate social media. I hate posting. I hate the amount of... Okay, this is kind of a half-truth, because I love Instagram, but I kind of don't feel like that's social media in the same way, even though it obviously is.
Yeah.
I like Twitter as well, because that's quite fun, and I need it for work as well. I hate Facebook.
And why do you hate Facebook? I go through phases with Facebook.
I hate it.
But I think, you know, for quite a long time I've hated it for a lot of reasons. Mm. Mainly because if friends want me to know something important about them, text me. Don't expect me to see it with Facebook's algorithm.
Yeah.
And then get upset that I didn't text you about your news. Like, that's like the worst. Yeah. I hate finding out things about my close friends via Facebook.
Yeah, it's really icky, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a generational thing.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
I think for the kind of Gen Zers, like, they won't feel that way, because it's just completely
natural.
Like, my mum doesn't want to hear about important things via text, whereas I'm fine with it. So it's a generational thing.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm with you on Facebook.
I'm not very... This is why I wasn't a good social media manager, because I'm not down with, I just don't love it the same way that, like, Beverly, who does social media management, she loves social media, she lives and breathes it. That's who you should be hiring, not the person that joined Facebook in, like, 2016.
No, you didn't join Facebook in 2015. Did you?
Just for the blog.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was on it in 2006 for
That's
about
why
a
when
year.
You go back, you can't really find any, like, heinous pictures of you, which is really upsetting.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Really upsetting. When I first became Facebook friends with you, I was like, right, let's get a cup of tea and do a stalk, and there was, like, nothing. Now it
really
all makes
boring.
Sense.
So I was on it at the very beginning the very beginning we were talking about, which was after uni, we'd already started
2007,
jobs,
so, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So it already, like, felt a bit different, because you couldn't be friends with your work friends back in those days.
Yeah, that's true.
You were only really friends with people that you'd actually met in real life. So actually going back, the main reason why I hate social media is I hate the algorithm. I hate thinking about the algorithm.
Yeah.
I hate having to put in so much effort. I feel like for Facebook as well, I do get quite a lot of traffic from Facebook, but I would 1,000,000% rather put my efforts into SEO than trying to outsmart an algorithm that wants me to pay money.
Yeah. But you've talked about how you love Instagram.
Mm.
So let's talk about Instagram and algorithms and paying money.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because I have a love-hate relationship with Instagram.
You do, don't
which
you?
Is basically 99% of the time I hate it. And then 1% of the time I like it, and that's the 1% that I'm on Instagram stories.
Yeah.
And that's, like, pretty much the only thing I like about
that's
Instagram.
That's your sweet spot.
I love Insta stories.
Yeah.
I love it. But I hate Instagram because I hate having to overthink each picture and caption and hashtag and, just tires me out.
Yeah.
And I do see results when I make a real effort. But for me, it's a total effort. But you've described Instagram as being your place.
Yeah, it's where I found my tribe, for yeah. sure.
And so how do you feel? Because obviously Facebook now own Instagram mm-hmm. and some of those same frustrating algorithm changes mm-hmm. and pay-to-play stuff. Like, how does that sit with you?
I mean, I just think it's gonna happen. And I try not to worry about it too much. I feel like the Instagram community are so ardent in their love for Instagram.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
But even with all the algorithm changes and the fact that... So there was a change recently where we all got really excited and thought it was chronological, but actually it isn't technically chronological. But so your feed is chronological, but in an algorithmed way. Like, that in itself is just...
It's madness.
Like, I mean, who cares? Who yeah. actually gives a shit? I don't know, I love it. I love it so much. I find that my world has become so small through Instagram. There are people that I talk yeah. to every single day.
Yeah.
But there's, I don't know, a handful of people that I've met in real life and become friends with. You're one of them. Yeah. All from Instagram.
Aggressively stalking the yeah. stories. But that was like my friendship play.
I love it.
Aggressively responding to people's stories.
I think it's a really bold move.
Yeah, I'm just like, I do the same. I'm over 30 now.
Yeah, exactly.
Aggressive friending is like the best thing ever.
I'm really into it. I'm yeah. really into it. I do exactly the same.
I think it's the only way that introverts can get by in the world.
Yeah.
It's like being aggressive on their terms.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hi, be my friend.
Just turn it to airplane mode. Yeah. Don't want to see people now.
Yeah, so true. Problem is, because I work from home so much.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't get dressed. Oh, God, don't even... Like, so I have like
your morning routine.
There's nothing I can film when I'm not at home. Yeah. So like my Instagram stories are sporadic.
Yeah.
Only when I'm interesting. But I do like watching other people's stories. And I do think for me that's revolutionized that platform.
Yeah.
Because it's become so I think one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is about authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the things that really frustrates me about Instagram, and I think about social media and blogging, like the thing that I think has really changed in the blogging world over the past, you know, however many years that we've been dabbling, is that kind of that authentic, real, you know, like back when we all had blogger blogs, we had pictures that were the size of a thumbnail,
God.
That was normal and that was okay. And I'm not saying that where we are now is worse. It is infinitely better and better to read, and I can't imagine us ever going back to that place. But there is something about the kind of perfection of the online space now, which for me was never really what blogging was all about.
Yeah.
And Instagram, you know, some people's photos, editing, etc., has become for me personally a bit of a terrifying space sometimes. Yeah. Particularly in travel, but I think fashion, beauty, the whole shebang. How has it changed for you, kind of the blogging world, with regards to that realism and authenticity?
Everything's just got a lot more slick.
Yeah.
And who was that? You know that post I shared it on Twitter? I can't remember her name, but we'll find it and link
it
in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes.
But she wrote about she's a new blogger in 2017.
Oh, so it was so far...
So far, so good.
But her name's Sophie. Name. Yeah. Amazing pun. Loved it.
So good.
Yeah, I read that. I actually read that yesterday. I saw that you posted it. It was such a good post.
It's so good.
She started she started blogging around the same time as I started my new blog.
Ah, interesting. So yeah. So she's talking about what it's actually like being a new blogger in 2017. And she had some really good insights. But one of the things that she said, it's so much thicker. You come to the table needing... an Olympus pen and a professional backdrop and all the rest of it, which I don't necessarily think, I mean, she didn't say this, but I don't necessarily think, I think you could, there is probably still a bit of an innocence around it, but yeah, like it's just so much slicker.
Well, Sophie wrote a post this week, and I don't know, I know you've interviewed Sophie, so
the blogging myths.
Yeah, the blogging myths. Yeah, and she
talked about it.
Yeah, and she talked about the whole kind of, you know, some of her best posts are where she's taken photos on her iPhone. And that's so interesting to me because I recently wrote a post about Cuba, and I've wanted to write a post about Cuba for ages, but I haven't written about Cuba because back then I wasn't a travel blogger, and I took my shitty point and shoot, and it wasn't even like a good point and shoot.
Yeah.
It was like a really shitty point and shoot. So all of my pictures from Cuba, I'm going to use your word because it's the only word for it, are total gash. Like, they are honestly, like, I look at my pictures of Havana and die a bit inside. Like, personally. Also, I look at pictures where I've, like, framed the shot and gone, like, what were you taking a picture of? What even is this? Like, so I have wanted to write about Cuba because my photographer, and I, as if I'm going to go back to Cuba anytime soon, because, like, money.
But who cares about that? I'm the same as, like, a lot of my posts, especially nowadays, none of my travel photography, to be fair, is pictures taken on my iPhone, but almost all of my posts, it's a picture taken with my iPhone.
Well, I've taken quite
I don't give a shit.
Well, quite a lot of my pictures are iPhone pictures when Andrew gets upset when I get my big camera out.
Yeah.
So I just snap on my iPhone. And I think some of it's about my eye for pictures changing as I know what I want to write about.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cuba one is just also my New York pictures from like 2011. Honestly, so sad.
It's horrible when you look back at pictures.
And I just go, oh my God, I'm not going to be going to New York again anytime soon. So we won't write about that. But I wrote a post about Cuba. But not like a guide post. It was like five reasons why you should go. And I've got like the five photos in that post are basically the only five photos that are just.
Five photos.
But I got five photos, so we're all good. Yeah. So, you know, out of that trip, one post, we're all happy. But I, you know, but actually, then I have that whole conversation with myself and I'm editing those photos in Lightroom and I'm taking 25 photos of salmon egg on toast from a brunch place in Amsterdam for my blog. And then I go. Get home and I go, really? That's not, you know, is
and what is it, that's not real life?
Or? Yeah, it's not real life, and is it, and you do get but into that.
This is what I think about authenticity, and actually for the benefit of authenticity, we were having a conversation about this, weren't we?
Yes.
We started recording, because as we speak, Emilia Liana has had this whole furore about her
photoshopping her Instagram.
And I kind of think, I mean, there's arguments for both, isn't there? But we all edit our pictures. I style a lot. I mean, you know my Instagram, it's quite styled. So, I mean, I don't live like that.
Yeah, you don't always have a bowl of cherries just there.
I know.
I was really sad when I walked into your house today and there wasn't just like a lone bowl of cherries on a white desk. I was like, oh, hashtag authentic.
I know, seriously. Why hasn't the Daily Mail picked up on this?
It's ridiculous.
But I kind of feel like if we want to be really authentic, do you want to see me first thing in the morning with no makeup, looking absolutely disgusting, boobs leaking because I'm breastfeeding? Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's nonsense. I think people just get so out of control about it. And
The way I sit on it is my photography is never going to be amazing, and I cannot be asked to learn Photoshop. Mm-hmm. I'm 34. I've got Gilmore Girls to watch.
Exactly. Like, there's other things to do.
I kind of use filters and stuff on photos just to brighten them and stuff, but I don't do any major playing around. And I think that some of my pictures are styled, and I work really hard on my photography now. But my authenticity will always come from the words that I write, as opposed to the pictures that I take. And for me personally, that's quite important. But I also do wonder whether that's a generational thing as well, because I see a lot of the newer generation of bloggers coming through not really thinking, this is such a generalization, I'll probably get hate for it via your podcast, but caring more about how it looks and the photography as opposed to the words.
I
don't know if that's quite broad generalization, but I think it's because, you know, when we were starting out in 2008, cameras like that weren't as accessible. Like, they were really expensive. You couldn't get Lightroom for $8.99 a month.
You had to pay
500 quid for a Photoshop license. And I think because all that stuff's become more accessible, it's become more about how things look than how things read.
I would agree. I think it's easier to post a nice looking picture than a captivating set of words, I guess. Because, I don't know, I'm trying to be a bit careful because I'm not a very good photographer either. I say that as if we're both shit photographers. You take beautiful pictures.
We're great. but then
but we're not,
But that's so interesting you should say that, because actually we're not bad.
No, we're not.
Both of us are pretty good.
But in this current
climate.
But
in the current climate, we're shit. Yeah. And that's so interesting to me. Like, when did everyone become David Bailey?
Yeah.
Like, that, I can't wrap my head around that.
That's a really good point, actually.
And that's the thing I find about authenticity.
Yeah.
And maybe everyone just has mad photography skills now.
Yeah, I find that difficult to be. I think there's a combination, isn't there? There are some people on Instagram who stick out as just incredible. Hannah Argyle or...
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone else, but there's absolutely loads. Yeah, I've just drawn a blank. But there's loads of people who are super creative and incredible photographers. But then there are lots and lots and lots more that are average or above average and just have incredible editing techers because it's really, but like you say, it's really accessible.
So accessible now.
But it's not, you're right, it's not the same with blogs, because if you see a badly written blog, it doesn't matter if it's the most premium theme, the photos are amazing. If someone just can't write for shit, they can't write for shit, and there's, you can't polish a turd.
Yeah, that's kind of it. And I you know, the internet is full, and it is full of shit content.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think sometimes I wonder whether it's hard to stand out with good writing in the climate that we're in.
I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't think it is. I think Sophie Cliff is a really good example of this.
Sophie Cliff's writing brings me to tears on a daily basis.
Writer, and she doesn't promote her stuff beyond probably automatically pushing it to Facebook and Twitter. She just doesn't care about it. She doesn't put pinnable images in her post. And by her own admission, she's like, oh, I just put a half decent image. She's a good photographer, but she doesn't.
She doesn't. And also, like, she blogs like every day.
Yes, yeah.
Like, wow. Like, I'm in awe of that.
Yeah, I know.
And her process is really interesting as to how she kind of comes to it. And that's because she has a love for writing and she's just got that. She's got stories in her head that she wants to tell, and I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, definitely.
And I like to read more of that.
Yeah, me too.
More people do that, please.
Yes, everyone, please do that.
So, two last questions for you on your own podcast. Two things. And the first is, I guess, what's the best piece of advice that you've got for people? Like, maybe it's about those wanting to make the transition from blogger to writer, or if it's about kind of growing your blog, because I know that you've got a great series on your blog around kind of blogging tips, like SEO, and your SEO stuff was phenomenal, thank you.
Thanks.
We'll link that in the show notes as well.
Yes, we will.
We'll link that. And also, you do blog mentoring. Do you still do blog mentoring at the moment?
I've kind of taken a bit of a break. But for the moment, but
in a few months' time, when Anais is not permanently clamped to nipple.
Oh my god, one day soon.
Lucy may well be taking on blog mentoring clients, and Lucy's very good.
Thanks.
So you should take her up on that. But maybe it's about growing your blog, or maybe it's about making that transition, because I know you get a lot of questions about becoming a journalist or a freelance journalist. What's the best piece of advice that you could share?
I think if you actually, with any of it, just literally do it. Just take that first step. Just do it. It's not as scary as you think. And probably the biggest game changer for me in terms of becoming a journalist was appreciating my own worth in my writing and realising, actually, people will pay for this. That's not a good tip.
I think that is a good tip, though, because you know
it's
what?
It's very practical.
But it is practical, because I think that... sometimes we can be so stuck, everything we've just been talking about authenticity and this really slick sort of perfect blogging world, if someone's starting out now, the barrier for entry, the bar for entry is set so high that it could stop you from telling your story. But I think most people have got really exciting, interesting stories to tell. And just doing it, just starting, is a really good tip. Putting yourself out there, whether that's you're already blogging and you want to pitch.
Yeah.
Like, I know that, I do Monica's blogging course that she talked about in episode 3.
Yeah, we talk about it in every episode, guys.
Monica's blogging course.
She basically sponsors this podcast. Yeah. But she doesn't.
She doesn't actually sponsor it. But Monica's blogging course is great, actually. And she talks quite a lot about just send the pitch.
Yes, just do it.
Just send the pitch. Yeah. And I haven't, and I keep procrastinating about, but I haven't got a design
PD kit. Yeah, we need to talk about this.
And I haven't got this. And I'm like... you know, and actually I've had someone approach me, a PR approach me to go and do something before I've pitched, and that's really given me quite a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. But you don't need to wait for that to happen.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think it's the same with you about, you know, if you want to do this, you need to do it. And the first thing you need to do is put words down on a page.
I think there's so many people, and I hear this a lot, I talked about it in another podcast episode with Fiona from Whimsy and Grey, that we both hear people saying, oh, I'm really excited to launch my blog. I've got like 10 posts written already. Why? What's the point? Yeah. No one is going to read your blog on the first day.
So that's literally what I did. Oh my gosh, I'm an old blogger. Yeah, so when I started my new blog, I like started putting posts up there in December, but I launched it on the 1st of January like I was some queen that everyone was going to read my blog.
No, but that was a bit different.
It's a bit different because I already had an audience. Yeah. But even so, it's just like, you're so right. No one's going to go, oh, I'm going to go to this, because no one knows you exist.
Yeah.
And I think it's good having a bank of ideas.
Yeah, definitely.
So in Monica's course, she's like, write down 100 blog post ideas, blog post titles, and that's like super helpful so you don't run out of steam when you first start. But yeah, just literally publish something.
Just start writing. And start writing like no one's reading.
Yeah.
I think it's more important than writing for a niche or setting out or knowing your brand or anything like that. All of that stuff will come afterwards. But if you don't nail down your writing, then nothing else is going to happen.
No, because I think ultimately, like, if you want to do this for a living, unless you're one of these mad photographer skill people.
That's true.
Or you look absolutely insane banging in a MAC lipstick.
Or in a bikini.
Or in a bikini. Your writing needs to be great. Your writing needs to be amazing. It needs to be absolutely brilliant. So honing your craft, writing is important.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
We probably should have started with this one, but I don't know. I think it's a nice way to finish your own starring podcast on your own podcast. Why did you decide to start this podcast?
I love podcasts. I love listening to podcasts.
Top tip, FYI, just to interrupt Lucy on our own podcast. I also love podcasts, and Lucy recommended me a podcast today.
Yes.
And I'm going to go off-grid for about 9 months because it's called Gilmore Guys. If you're a Gilmore Girls fan, it's two guys discussing every episode of Gilmore Girls, and I think I'm now in love.
It's amazing.
That's it, I'm done now.
Yeah.
So listen to this and all of the episodes you haven't listened to on What She Said, and then listen to Gilmore Guys.
Yes, and they're still going. They're doing, so Amy Sherman-Palladino did a series called Bunheads after Gilmore Guys that's only available, I think it's on like Hulu.
But
it got cancelled after two series, I think, with Emily.
Oh.
It's apparently really good, so they carried on and they're doing Bunheads, but I think they finished that now as well.
Oh my god!
It's pretty devastating. I haven't listened to any of those because I don't know how to get Bunheads. In a year's time,
this is how I'm going to feel.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just had to let you know.
But on the plus side, we've got What She Said. So
yes, fine.
You're obsessed with podcasts. Continue.
Yes, I'm obsessed with podcasts.
Continue on your own podcasts.
I just really like them as a way of consuming content. And I've never really been, and I kind of felt a bit like I wanted to do something different creatively. I wanted a new challenge. I'm never going to vlog. I am never going to vlog.
The same way.
Every time people say, every conference I go to or anything that I read about, you know, what is new in 2017 for blogging,
video.
Say video. That's awesome. Like, I agree with that. That's absolutely the way things are going. But I hate creating video. I hate editing it. I don't like vlogging. As much as I talk to camera a lot in Instagram stories. Yeah.
It's so different.
So I wanted a new challenge and that's kind of where it came about, but it was so long ago. So I've been thinking about it for a year?
So this is how we met.
Yes, it's how we met, indeed.
Because we aggressively friended each other.
Yeah.
And then you were like, can I come and watch your podcast?
Yeah, and then I was on your podcast.
And then you were on the podcast, and then basically it's all snowballed.
Yeah, and then it got out.
It's out of hand now. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I threatened to show you my boobs. We have Nando's.
We've had Nando's now, so that means we're married.
Essentially,
in some countries, we're married now. Sorry. We've shared Portuguese chicken.
Yeah, and Portuguese tarts.
Oh, my God. That's the honeymoon done, too. I'm just over it now. And why is, and you know, you've taken a very deliberate sort of stance. It's the What She Said podcast, mm-hmm. So full of she's and women. And,
it's all about women.
And what's that, like, what's that about?
Well, you know what? Women create humans. We create life. I really wondered
where you were going. I thought you were going to say women create awesome content. No, humans.
We do.
Bottom line.
The human race would be extinct if it wasn't for the female form.
Yes.
Let's just put it out there and just say that. Whether you can actually give birth to a baby, whether you adopt a baby, like everything comes from the woman.
It does.
And it blows my mind that in 2017 we still have this massive pay gap. I've kind of got off on a tangent there, but all of that is to say I'm a feminist.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why I have to state that I'm a feminist, because, I mean, isn't everyone in this day and age?
Oh, if only.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm interested in what women have to say.
Yeah. And I think as well, like, blogging, the online world is one world where women are kicking ass right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I mean, they're kicking ass all over the place. We are ass-kicking people. But
where we're getting recognised for kicking
actually,
ass.
But actually, online, like, to the point where there was a blogging award where, like, a group of guy bloggers were like, why isn't there should be a guy blogger category. And I was like, oh, now, there's a guy. Oh, please. I did not get involved on Twitter because, you know, like, shit would have gone down.
Twitter's not a good place for that, I find.
It would have been too much. But, you know, I think the online space and I think on the internet has created a framework and a place where women can create the lives that they want to and they need to, particularly juggling motherhood and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that's
really
interesting.
Because we basically have to,
Yeah, like, you know, it's out of necessity, I think, definitely. It's something I've been thinking about quite a lot. But also, I think it's a really lovely kind of space to play in. Sometimes it's annoying, but...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, sometimes.
I think on the whole... actually, I'm not going to say that last bit. Ignore me. I've got nothing interesting to say there. I bored myself as the thought was
I was quite
out
bored.
Of my mouth.
I was quite bored just looking at you. I wasn't really. We'll use these for the outtakes. Yeah. So, Lucy, this has been a total privilege to kind of chat to you on your own podcast and hear about your kind of method and your story and learn some exciting things about you. And share kind of your wisdom with your own listeners.
Thanks.
So hopefully everyone will tune in next week when Lucy will be back in the hot seat interviewing the next wonderful woman for What She Said.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes, please think about giving me a lovely rating on iTunes. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, head over to my blog, wanderloose.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, where I'm @wanderlooseblog.